our audience to get to share in this story. I know many of you are vaccinating teens for meningitis every day, and I've heard some exciting stories about ways to connect the teens we're vaccinating here with the people in Africa, but this is what immunizations can do when people work together over decades, really. Well, that's a tough act to follow, but I have total confidence that our next speaker, Bruce Aylward, will be up to the challenge. This is a man whose every living moment for the past, I think, 20-something years has been devoted to polio eradication, and his every waking moment is every moment because he basically doesn't sleep. He is currently, I think, on Pakistan time, so you'll bear with him. He's going to talk about progress and remaining challenges in global polio eradication, and his official title is something like head of the Global Polio Eradication Initiative at the World Health Organization, but he's recently stepped up to be an assistant director general there, really over the whole humanitarian and crisis cluster. So welcome, Bruce.
The problem with the fact that I haven't slept in 20 years is that it's starting to show in my talks, I'm afraid. So hopefully you'll bear with me. But ladies and gentlemen, I was absolutely delighted to have the chance to speak to you today and accept Ann's invitation. And that's because the U.S. has been really at the center of this eradication initiative since its inception, with people from everywhere, from the state level, from the federal level, playing a role in the program. I'm not going to talk so much about that. I'm going to talk about the big program. But the U.S. immunization community really has played an integral role in this. I have to say, Ann, though, as I got closer to the talk, I started approaching this with more and more trepidation. And this is because the first letter I got from Ann said, please come and talk to these important people for 20 minutes. And then the next one, you know, it took me a little while. And then she came back and said, listen, it's really important that you come and you speak to these people for 18 minutes. And I wasn't sure, are you less important 2 weeks later, or am I less important? And then finally she wrote to me again and she said, listen, Bruce, it's really important. We need to confirm this, that you can come and speak to these people for 15 minutes. And, of course, I'm standing here right now and I've got two clocks. One of them says 18 minutes and the other one says 20 minutes. Actually, it says zero right now. But I think the reason for that confusion is because I understand yesterday you have one of the giants, literally and metaphorically speaking, of course, of immunization speak last night about the incredible history of immunization and the breathtaking future. But, of course, I understand as well he didn't speak much about polio, which is the truly incredible recent history and will be the breathtaking future. And I'm taking it that's why I've got a couple extra minutes. So what I'm going to run you through in this talk, really three big things. I want to talk a little bit about the history of this initiative. Then I want to talk about the lessons that we learned along the way, and then how we've applied those over the last couple of years, 12 months, to what you'll see, what I think is pretty breathtaking impact that is changing the game in terms of getting the job finished. So to jump right in, this is polio. You know what the disease looks like. It's a horrifying, debilitating, devastating, painful disease. The strategies we use to try and eradicate it are fourfold, and you see them laid out here. Basically, routine immunization, campaigns where you need them, surveillance to find the last chains of transmission, and then mop-up campaigns to get to every single child and get the last chains of transmission interrupted. Similar strategies that we apply in many parts of the world against many vaccine-preventable diseases in particular, but the challenge with something like polio, which is a globally endemic disease, is to get to a level of programmatic perfection, you know, 90%, 95% real coverage in places where basic health services get to maybe 2, 3, 4% of the population, as you can see evidenced by the phenomenal picture in the center of that slide there. So that's what we set out to do 20 years ago, and if I had known at the time, I must say I would have approached even this with a little bit more trepidation. But this is the good news. Here's what happened to polio with the introduction of those strategies globally. The number of cases globally fell from an estimated 350,000 the year that the initiative began in 88 to about 1,000 cases a year today. So from over 1,000 1,000 children being paralyzed every single day to about 1,000 children a year. And this is from the start that you see in 1988, wherein most of the world was still endemic for the disease. Along the way, one of the three types of polio were eradicated globally, and that's the type 2 serotype. I think polio did that on purpose, by the way, because there's, you know, a real imaginative group in the world of poliovirology came up with type 1, 2, and 3 for the virus. And by eradicating type 2 first, of course, you were kind of stuck, because if you don't finish the job, how do you explain to future generations what happened to type 2? You know, it's like, well, we got tired and we didn't finish eradicating 1 and 3. So it's put the pressure on us to get the job finished. In terms of geographically what happened, you can see between 1988 and 2008, a really stunning decline in the number of countries where we still had indigenous virus. Fell from over 125 countries to about 4 countries, and really 4 parts of 4 countries. The problem then, of course, was we got stuck in those 4 countries, and to add insult to injury, the virus then insisted on going back and reinfecting so many of the places where it had been cleaned out. And over 40 countries have been reinfected with polio over the last 10 years, and it's cost well over $1 billion, and probably real cost closer to a couple of billion, to try and interrupt those last chains of transmission. So by 2008, quite frankly, everyone was getting frustrated, my wife not least of all, and she moved to Geneva in 2000 with the promise that we had 2 years left to finish the job. So by 2008, everybody was frustrated, and the World Health Assembly, the ministers of health of the world, stood up and said to the director general, look, we need a new strategy. We're not pulling out. We need a new strategy to finish the job. And that launched a full special 1-year program of work with our core partner agencies, CDC, Rotary, UNICEF, to really take haul the program apart, look at its pieces, and see could we put together a stronger program going forward. And a lot of the lessons learned are lessons that are also very relevant to domestic immunization programs. And in fact, a lot of people from the domestic program in the U.S. played a big role in this work. So what are some of the lessons we learned and what's new going forward? Well, the first thing we learned is that your mouse doesn't work. Okay, here we go. The first thing we learned is that the immunity gaps in which poliovirus can persist seem to be a lot smaller than when we started. Now, when I started in polio immunization under the tutelage of Dr. Harry Hull, who's here in the front row, one of the giants in the polio program, he and I and everybody in the world pretty much thought that you needed a big susceptible population over a fairly big area for this virus to persist. And it's clear now in certain parts of the world this virus is persisting in very small populations and very small subgroups, especially in Asia, which means we've got to adapt our strategies to getting to every single, not just geographic area, but the subpopulations as well. And this resulted in a whole set of new tactics and what we call a high-risk block approach. So it's a sub-district approach in India to get out, reach every single child in the highest priority blocks. 41 blocks, it turned out of thousands in India, seemed to be the key to getting the job finished. The virus seemed to be persisting in just 41 of these. In northern Nigeria, it was a different ballgame, and I think many of you heard about the tragedy there where the vaccine was suspended in the early 2000s because of some rumors about side effects. And it took a lot of time to rebuild community confidence, and there was resistance to be overcome, both evident hidden resistance, I guess. And you can see here one of the emirs now of one of the traditional leaders of northern Nigeria who have really, as a group, taken to championing the eradication program with a lot of support, you can see, from our friends from Rotary who are featured in the foreground of this picture. So different tactics for different areas. One of the second things that we learned was that the immunity thresholds we needed to stop transmission were different in different areas, and a one-size-fits-all approach was not going to be the most efficient way to get polio transmission stopped. And you can see in this schematic here, we've just roughly shown that in Nigeria, transmission seems to stop when we have around 80% real coverage, real immunity, rather. In India, much, much higher, probably 98%. So that's a level of programmatic perfection you're trying to get with a vaccine that doesn't work very well. It works half as well in northern India as everywhere else, unfortunately. And it's an area where public services get routine immunization gets, until very recently, to less than 20% of kids. So and in a population between Uttar Pradesh and Bihar in northern India of about 250 million people with 500,000 kids born every single month. So that's the kind of immunity threshold you're trying to get to. So we had to adapt our strategies, move from coverage surveys to sero surveys. And here you can see the results of data from UP and Bihar, very young children, 6 to 7 months, showing coverage 2 years ago was at about 78%, not coverage, sorry, immunity. And by this year, middle of this year, 98% immunity in the northern states of UP and Bihar, something that people said was impossible as recently as a couple of years ago. You can see type 3 immunity starting to catch up. And from northern Nigeria, I wanted to give you another example where we're not using serosurveys. We're using different tools to measure progress now, lot quality sampling, to try and figure out what is real coverage in those areas, give us a better sense of risk as we go forward. So we've adapted those strategies. A third lesson that we learned was some of the tools that we developed, like the new monovalent vaccines to try and optimize our per-dose seroconversion rates, had, you know, their own problems. Now, monovalents were introduced in about the mid-2000s when our graph started to go flat like that and we had an oscillating very low number of cases every year. So we introduced monovalent vaccines there. And the first place we used them was Egypt. The virus stopped almost immediately. It was an area, though, that only had one type of polio left. But it became a very popular tool, and within a couple of years, everyone was using it to fairly predictable result in retrospect, where we saw type 1 cases come down, but type 3 cases go up, and we had this oscillating problem of type 1 and type 3 outbreaks in some areas. But, and of course, the obvious question from my 10-year-old son was, why didn't you make the bivalent vaccine first? By the way, it's his birthday today, and I'm here on this side of the ocean to give you a sense of how important you people are and why I'm going to run 21 minutes, Dan. This is such a great story, and I thought Bill was going to tell half of it last night, and I'm stuck with the whole thing. So, But with the bivalent vaccine, the problem there was that this was a vaccine that would have had a very, very short lifespan, a few years, because in post-eradication we'll use monovalent vaccines in one of our stockpiles. The other problem was it had never been used historically. Sabin actually made monovalent vaccines, so we had 2 or 3 years of a lot of experience globally, a lot of safety data on it that allowed us to use a fast-track licensing approach to developing it, which we didn't have for bivalent. By the way, the Canadians put together the three serotypes into a trivalent vaccine a few years later. I happen to be from Canada, by the way. Now, the bivalent vaccine, though, was a great idea, and this was one of the other big innovations of last year. What we managed to do was working with a group of manufacturers around the world with support from many parts of the world, including CDC that did the critical lab work on this. We did a very rapid development and clinical trial. Because of the experience with monovalent vaccines, they let us take forward bivalent with the same licensing pathway, and we were able to introduce this in Afghanistan by the end of last year. Afghanistan introduces vaccine in December of 2009. As of the 1st of April, I think, or the 7th of April of this year, it will be exactly 1 year since they've had a type 3 virus. So, again, seems to be having the kind of impact we'd hoped for. The fourth big lesson, there's only four, don't worry. The fourth big lesson was that the roots of poliovirus transmission and spread of viruses, just like most diseases, are now largely predictable. And so we adapted our strategies, pre-planned campaigns to try and get in front of the virus while we cleaned out the reservoirs. So has any of this made a difference? Well, I'll try and convince you with the next two maps. This is a map of polio cases over the last 12 months. Actually, I'm about a month out of date there. Over 20 countries, nearly 24 countries, were infected with polio over the last 12 months. And you can see there was still intense transmission in most of our reservoir areas. We're just coming out of the high season for polio right now, and this is what the map looks like today. If you look at West and Africa and the Horn of Africa, this is the first time, certainly in the history of the polio program, that both of those areas have been completely clean at the same time. If you look at northern India, we have not had a case of polio in Uttar Pradesh or Bihar due to either serotype for the first time in 6 months. And in northern Nigeria, a striking decline in cases, as you can see from this year-to-year comparison of cases here. A 95% reduction in cases over the last 12 months, clearly demonstrating that something is going right with the program and with the new plan. And for all the people that are awake, they usually clap when they see this graphic here. But I know what you're worried about is that we're not going to have enough time to see the whole presentation. You're right, so we'll keep going. Now, not everybody is convinced with graphics like this because, of course, this has been a 20-year eradication initiative. The virus has gone up and down, so every time it goes down now, everybody braces for it to go back up again. But this time, it appears to be quite different. For one thing, this is high season data that you're looking at here, and it looks like that's where the virus was choked out, going into the high season. The second thing is, not only do we have a reduction in the number of cases, reduction in geographic distribution, we also have a reduction in the genetic biodiversity of the virus. And these great maps and schematic here is actually from the CDC, from Anne's group, actually, who insisted I put the slide in and talk about them. Anne's group is at the center of a global laboratory network that sequences every virus in the world right now to help us build information like that to be able to track what's happening. And you can see we've had a collapse in the biodiversity of the virus in the last 3 years, demonstrating real pressure now being put on the virus. A similar picture for type 3. So that's the impact. Things look very, very positive. The impact has been certainly more striking than most of us expected. We still have major risks. The first one begins with a P, and it's Pakistan, of course, where I've just come from. And it's because of the explosive outbreak last year, which wasn't solely the result of the floods and the other tragedies in the country. It was a result of chronic gaps in immunization coverage there, complicated by the floods, obviously, with spread to the high-risk areas. The other big challenge we have is three countries in Central Africa, Chad, DR Congo, and Angola, all of which had stopped indigenous virus at least, you can only stop it once, but then they stopped imported viruses as well, but they've been reinfected repeatedly either by Nigeria or India. And as time goes on, the circumstances in these countries are changing. They're not the same countries that stopped transmission the first time 10 years ago. And we've been too slow to recognize that, adapt our strategy to that. I've been telling Anne about it for months now, and she's only getting it now. But we obviously need an approach in Chad, DR Congo, and Angola like we have in India and are building in Nigeria and Pakistan. But clearly, the job can be done there as well. This will give you a sense as well how the game has changed over the last 12 months. Here you see in the last 2 months or 3 months, the president of each of the countries that are at risk of missing the major milestones for polio have personally called for and launched and overseen the initiation of a new emergency plan in their countries. So President Zardari, President Dos Santos in Angola, and the DR Congo President Kabila, who met with us in February, just over a month ago, to discuss the urgency of the problem. Countries are taking it seriously in a way they never have before, and it's in part because they recognize it's not just about polio, but eradication is about accessing children for basic service delivery. That's what it's all about. It's about holding communities, leaders, local leaders accountable for the stewardship of their populations and their children. That is what polio eradication is all about. Getting rid of this disease, this awful disease, is a means to a much, much bigger end. Now, other risks we faced last year that Anne suggested would be helpful for people to be aware of were the fact that polio reminded us of the horrific, devastating power of this disease in two countries, different continents, thousands of miles away, where we saw explosive outbreaks. 400-500 people paralyzed. In the Congo, it was nearly 600 people paralyzed, most of them adults because of immunity gaps, susceptibility gaps when they got exposed to a whopping dose of the inoculum. And we had a 32% case fatality rate, reminding people again this can cause explosive outbreaks and it can be a devastating, deadly disease, which most of the world has long forgotten. Here's a couple of pictures. Unfortunately, the young man in the top photograph died shortly after that picture was taken. A reminder again of just what we're dealing with and the importance of getting rid of this disease once and for all. As we look forward, one of the other major risks that Anne said I don't need to talk to you about because none of you're all public servants and none of you have money is about our financing gap. Well, we only need $670 million for the next 2 years, so I'll be standing there with a hat as you go out. But quite seriously, the U.S. government has been a very important supporter of the program through both U.S. CDC and USAID. This is a mapping of our donor profile for the next few years, but over the last 20 years, we have had an incredible partnership, really led by some remarkable groups like Rotary International, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation joining us, but at the core of this all was having been CDC and much of the U.S. government. So right now, with the new vaccines, new tactics, new political commitments, financing is the big challenge once again. So to wrap up, with a minute and 12 seconds to go, this is the picture of polio over the last 4 months. It is a picture that no one before in history has ever seen, a picture with so little disease in the world. As you can see, 4 endemic countries still have virus, a lot of it in Pakistan. In Afghanistan, by the way, very little disease. 1 virus so far this year. We've not seen the type 3 virus for 12 months. You can reach children behind the lines of conflict in areas of both acute and chronic conflicts, and we do. It takes a while to map out how to do it, but you can get there. And we have a remarkable opportunity to achieve what would be some of the major new landmarks for the program, stopping transmission in India, a country where people as recently as 12 months ago said it can never be done, and northern Nigeria, and then possibly even knocking out type 3 virus faster than we had expected. In 2009, 1,000 children were paralyzed by the type 3 poliovirus. Last year it was 89. So far this year it's about 6. So on track to try and get rid of a second one. See what you can do with 19 minutes of training, Ann. And then, you know, the big question then, and you're going to hear about it, you people have got to be advocates, not just for immunization in your local communities, but advocates for immunization globally. And, you know, one of the favorite programs to attack lately has been the polio eradication program. It's big, it's expensive, it's late, it's overdue, but it is reaching more children than any other public health program ever has in history on a sustained basis. It is reaching the communities that have never been reached before. It is a good buy. If you look in vaccines last month or a couple of months ago, a very nice analysis, net savings of at least $40 to $50 billion for the poorest low-income countries, not including this one, which is already making a fortune off saving, foregone polio cases, but big, big savings. It's a good buy, great secondary benefits, and it also is the right thing to do. And as the giant of immunization who spoke to you last night said, eradication attacks inequities. It provides the ultimate in social justice. We need everybody in this room advocating for not just your local immunization coverage and better programs, but better global programs, better global reach of immunization. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we are clearly on the road, finally, to a polio-free world, and I think the progress of the last year demonstrates by applying new tools, new lessons, new innovations, we can get the job.